We come together for worship, to wonder and hope and be and sing and listen together. We come as a homecoming, as an adventure. We come to discover and to be comforted. We come in part that we might hold in our hearts and be reminded and see one another's faces. We come in the midst of the storms of life, the ups and downs and all that is and comes and goes. And we hold in this place, in our hearts and our minds, our spirits, those among us, near and far, those we know who are experiencing the great joys of life and the great sorrows of life. Due to recent injuries, Dennis Abernathy has moved to California, where his daughter will be able to assist in his care. They left earlier this week. Dennis would love to hear from friends, and we'll let you know his address once he's settled into a new place. Any and all greetings are welcomed as he continues his healing journey, and we wish for him and his daughter much joy and peace. A memorial service, a gathering, informal service for Nancy Garst will be held here at the church on Tuesday, February 24th in the library at 2 o'clock. And if you knew Nancy and want to come and hear stories and tell stories about her, I hope to see you there. Let's get a hold in your thoughts and prayers, Tim Anderson, our music director, and his sister and their family. Tim's mother died last week. A service is being held this afternoon in her memory in the small town where she lived all of her life. Was an active member of the church and the music program there. And hold Tim in your thoughts and prayers. We don't usually in this space lift up birthdays. We usually let that be for the newsletter, but sometimes we hit the odometer in a certain place. And I think, you know, this one is worthy of being called out. So this week and next week, two of our devoted, long-time church members are hitting those 90, 95, 100 marks. Those are the ones that get a shout-out in worship this morning. So Ann Hobb was here at the first service, and her birthday is tomorrow. You'll have to ask her which of those odometer numbers she's hitting. I promised her I wouldn't give out the number, but I do want to ask folks to celebrate with and give warm birthday wishes to Elzon Lewis, who turns 95 next week. Happy birthday, Elzon. We expect many more years. It's a community of joy and milestones and sorrow and holding one another in times of joy and in sorrow, which are, as the poet said, woven fine, life in all its mystery. And we gather this day to talk about what it means to be a people of devotion, to celebrate love and its power to transform our lives and the world. And earlier this week, a colleague of mine, the Reverend Chip Rausch, who some of you might know, spent part of a summer here quite some time ago, shared a welcome to worship that he had written for his congregation in South Bend, Indiana. And a whole bunch of us said, can we use that this Sunday? And he said, of course. So our words of invocation from the Reverend Chip Rausch, slightly adapted. Yesterday was Valentine's Day. And we'll be talking about love and such things today. That means that it is a good time to remind ourselves that a person's moral worth and value as a human being has nothing to do with their relationship status. Whether you are single or partnered, whether you have several friends with benefits or are serially monogamous or celibate, whether you are bisexual, gay, lesbian, heterosexual, or whether you are part of the 1% or so who are asexual and do not experience much sexual attraction, we acknowledge your place on the human spectrum and welcome you. If you've gone through a recent breakup, if your job requires you to be apart too much of the time, if you still miss the one great love of your life, or if you are grieving any other loss this morning, we wish you peace and welcome you in. If you are angry or anxious, or if you are happy to be here, we acknowledge your human emotions and we bid you welcome. If you arrive drained, or numb from the slings and arrows of contemporary life, we offer you rest and a community of meaning. If you arrive mostly content and grateful for the gifts of your own life, we offer you a place of thanksgiving and wider vision. Whoever you are, we are glad you are here. Let us worship together.
Good morning. This month we've been exploring devotion at church. And today, earlier in religious education, we honored our fuzzy and furry friends by making dog biscuits and cat toys for the Winnebago Animal Shelter and bird feeders to hang in our own backyard. Our friends, who are furry and feathered, they have the unique ability to comfort and love us in a way. Their reach of a paw, their earnest look or sweet purr, that little nudge, it warms our hearts, and it makes our lives just a little bit gentler and a little bit kinder. Today, as an example of the devotion of our animal friends, we have the story of Hachiko. Hachiko was an Akita dog in Japan, and every day in 1924, Hachiko would walk his owner, Dr. Itno, to the train station, where he would go to work, and then Hachiko would walk home. And at the end of each day, Hachiko would walk back to the station and he would greet Dr. Itno with love and enthusiasm that only a dog can provide. And each day this happened for one full year. And then one sad day, Dr. Itno died while he was at work and he didn't return to the station. On that day, Hachiko, of course, did not know his master had died, and he went to the station and he waited for him. And people noticed the dog, and they very sadly and gently guided him home. But the next day, he returned. And that day, and every day, he returned to the station for 7 years. He waited at the station for 7 years, and then one day, he died at the station. Now, we'll never know exactly what drove Hachiko to return for so many years. A hopeful act, or perhaps a fond memory of love, but his dedication certainly honors him and Dr. Itno. His dedication was noticed, and there was a statue built from him at Shibuya Station and honors him and his love for his master. And in that busy train station, it is a very appropriate thing that it is a place where people now find each other and they meet each other in a crowd, in a cluster, in a chaos. But there is another statue of Dr. Itno and his dog Hachiko, and this one I like better. This is the one that I like to remember him by and this story by. This was built at the university where Dr. Itno worked, and it is when they are together and they are greeting each other at the station with love and devotion, as they did for so many days on that 1 year in 1924. The end. I'm gonna put you in
charge. This is the space in the order of service where a member of the congregation, usually a worship associate, offers a testimony about what the church and what the liberal faith means to them. And this month we're spending this time in this time talking about our new program here at the church, the Legacy Giving Program, the Legacy Society, and Plan Giving. We're doing this in the month of devotion because it's devotion to the church that has caused some folks over the years to make a provision in their will or their estate plan, their insurance plan, that some amount of that money would come to the church. And I'll tell you that it is only because of the generosity of those folks over many years that this place exists, that this building is maintained, that we have the programs that we have the music and the worship and the education and the space that we have. If not for that generosity, it would not exist as it is. And so each week this month, somebody from the church is talking about why they themselves are a member of the Legacy Society or want to be one. And there's a brochure in your order of service about the Legacy Society and what it means and different ways to do that. The idea is that you fill that out sometime this year if you want to join that society. And if you do it by the end of the year, you become a founding member of the Legacy Society. And we'll have a celebration once a year, and we hope that many of you will do that. And I thought for one of the weeks this month, I would share why I have joined the Legacy Society. So that's this week. So I recently had to update all my insurance documents and my contingent beneficiaries and my life insurance and all that kind of stuff and retirement accounts and who is all that going to go to. And so I said 90% to my children, 10% to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Rockford. They'll be well taken care of between that and everything else if anything should happen to me. And I want some portion of that to come to the church. This place where I don't just serve, but am a member and love and adore and want those programs, that ministry to continue, that place of work and meaning. It's really important to me. And I felt good to fill that out and say, just in case, some portion will go to the church. And it felt right. So I hope that you too will think about that in whatever way that might work for you. And it doesn't matter the amount now or later. We're looking for participation, and hope that you might consider joining the Legacy Society if it works for you. If you have any questions, you can talk to me or Pete Gioletto or Linda Sandquist about that program. We'll be happy to answer your questions. Let's see. We're going to sing. We're going to sing From You I Receive, To You I Give, this song up here. And there are motions that go with this. So I'll teach you the motions, which you can feel free to do. From You I Receive, To You I Give, together we share, and from this we live. It's very simple. I invite you to rise in body and or in spirit. I invite you to breathe. Just breathe in and out. It is our breath that gives us power and connects us. The word spirit comes from the word for breath. So when we ask, how is it with your spirit? We are asking, how are you breathing? How are you attending to the rhythms of life and your own presence in the world. So to breathe in and out. To bring to your mind and your heart the faces, the names, the voices of those whom you love and who love you. A friend, a family member, a neighbor, a lover, a pet, distant or near, those who are your treasured ones and who treasure you. See them in your mind's eye. Breathe in and out and let that feeling rest in you as we enter together into silence. May the spirit of love be in us and among us, creative, compassionate, transforming and sustaining, that power that flows in and through us, in and through one another, the world we share, the great cosmos, the holy, named and unnamed. May that spirit be in us. May that love be in us and come through us to the world. This day and every day. Amen. Blessed be. Namaste. John Greenleaf Whittier wrote those words. The letter fails, the systems fall, and every symbol wanes. The spirit overseeing all eternal love remains. John Greenleaf Whittier was a Quaker poet and a devoted abolitionist. He traveled around the country in the 1830s, 40s, and 50s speaking against slavery. And he published poems and prose against what he saw as a great moral evil, including this broadside, which you see here, with the words, "Am I not a man and a brother?" In a poem that accompanied it, "Are countrymen in chains?" It was one of the leading communicators about the anti-slavery movement. He also founded the Liberty Party, which became the Free Soil Party, which helped become the Republican Party that ended slavery. He laid the moral and political foundation for the end of slavery. He's not just an old poet. He's an American hero, an example of what a life of love and faith means. So I want to start here with John Greenleaf Whittier to say that, yes, in this month of devotion, I'm going to spend time talking in this sermon about love, and I'm going to talk about romantic relationships and about marriage and kindness and all that stuff. But if you think that love is mushy, think again. If you think that love is weak, know that it is love that broke those chains. Dr. King said that hatred and bitterness can never cure the disease of fear. Only love can do that. It is the same power, the same feeling. I think of it like a light shining through a crystal. It becomes many different colors. Love is manifest in many different ways, in the service of wider justice, in friendship, in family relationships, and the appreciation of art and nature and wonder, all that gives us goosebumps and soars our heart, in the feeling of connection and dependence on a holy power beyond our understanding, and in romance, in committed partnership. Different colors of light, different forms of love, but one light, one power, one feeling, one affective emotion, one love. Many forms, one love. It's not weak or passive. It's the prime creative force in the world. So I don't want you to think about that what I have to say today is sentimental or passé. Love, manifest as basic human kindness, is the force that creates justice, that makes beauty, that sustains us and transforms us, that's worthy of our own lives, our own best efforts, and our most essential spirit. Basic human kindness. For Whittier is right, the letter fails, the systems fall, and every symbol wanes. The spirit overseeing all eternal love remains. Things pass away. Achievements, the circumstances of the moment, this cause or that one, this fad or the other, things pass away. The letter fades. Systems, symbols, and people, too, and relationships, and more. Things end. It is the spirit of love that flows through the transient things of the world, and in the end, I assure you, it will be this question. Were they a person of love, a person of basic human kindness? It will be this question that matters most, that matters at all. The manifestations will vary. Different forms, different colors of light. Whittier, never married and never had children, was yet clearly guided by love through his whole life. We devote ourselves to the cause of love in many different ways. One of Whittier's fellow abolitionists, also one of the key communicators of that movement to end slavery in the United States, was the Unitarian minister Theodore Parker. And Parker railed against slavery and injustice from his pulpit, helped fight the Fugitive Slave Act and be part of the Underground Railroad and fund anti-slavery efforts. And he was a regular, everyday pastor. One of the great privileges of ministry is that we get to be part of that great rainbow of love, all the different manifestations and colors of the spectrum, do justice and remember the dead and sit with the dying and counsel the troubled and celebrate victories and bless the newborn and officiate at marriages. Reflecting on the marriages he knew as a pastor and giving advice to the newly married, part of his marriage sermon were these words, which are our first reading for today. He wrote, "It takes many years to marry completely two hearts, even the most loving and well assorted. A happy wedlock is a long falling in love. Young persons think love belongs only to the brown-haired and crimson-cheeked. So it does for its beginning. But the golden marriage is a part of love which the bridal day knows nothing of. A perfect and complete marriage where wedlock is everything you could ask and the ideal of marriage becomes actual, is not common, perhaps as rare as perfect personal beauty. People are married fractionally, now a small fraction, then a large fraction. Very few are married totally, and they only after some 40 or 50 years of gradual approach and experiment. Such a large and sweet fruit is a complete marriage that it needs a long summer to ripen in, and then a long winter to mellow and season it. But a real happy marriage of love and judgment between noble people is one of the things so very handsome that if the sun were, as the Greek poets fabled, a god, he might stop the world and hold it still now and then in order to look all day long on some example thereof and feast his eyes on such a spectacle. I'm a everyday pastor like Theodore Parker, and I see the truth of his words. There is, after the spring and summer and fall, a ripeness, a sweetness, a beauty in the long and golden marriage. Those who pass through the gates of illusion and disillusion, who have learned to grow apart and together as time flows on, cycling back to each other, who are themselves with each other, who aren't trying so hard, but just being real in their realness. Love and kindness and mutuality guide their lives. It's beautiful, and it is rare. Let's be honest, it's rare. We wouldn't admire it so much if it was easy. But we recognize the truth of Parker's words, that God might hold the world still now and then in order to look all day long on some example thereof. Parker was a transcendentalist and a romantic. He gave an almost mystical explanation of what made this long-lasting, happy, complete marriage possible. He spoke in metaphor, which is how we often speak about such things. But as is the case in so many things in the last generation or two, we now actually can know the answer to this question. We can use data, observations of couples, science, longitudinal studies, to know what is it that makes a relationship strong and healthy for many years. What allows some couples to overcome challenges while others are usually undone by them? This isn't a mystery, it turns out, and it isn't some magic formula. There aren't 10 steps to a healthy marriage or a healthy friendship. It isn't a checklist of things you have to do or a special trick. There's one thing, be kind, kindness. That's it. That's the one thing. The kindness that keeps any relationship strong is manifest in two particular ways, different ways that people respond to each other. By the way that you respond when your partner does something you don't like, and the way you respond when your partner bids for your attention. The research on this has been led by John Gottman, a psychologist at the University of Washington. He did two major studies. In one, years ago, they interviewed couples who were newly together about their relationship, how they met, what it was like when they were together, while the couples were attached to electrodes, so they could measure their heart rate and their perspiration and all of that while they were talking. And they found that the couples that were still together 6 years later had low heart rates in those moments. Their partner made them more calm and at peace. The couples who were not still together had elevated rates. Being around their partner made them anxious, made them scared to say the wrong thing, that they were walking on eggshells or something was going to happen. They were anxious about it. The second study, which he did after that, invited couples to stay in a bed and breakfast in Seattle, but one wired with cameras and recording devices, which the couples knew about. It wasn't a secret, part of the research study. And they stayed together, there together. The couples that were that stayed together, were happy together, they talked to each other differently than the ones who did not. They gave more compliments and much less criticism. When one person would say something, the other person would respond with interest. The classic example that Gottman uses is the bird watcher. Now, some of you are bird watchers. I'm not a bird watcher, but you don't need to be a bird watcher to get this. The husband is looking out the window and says, "Look, there's a finch of some kind, or something special." And the wife turns and says, "Oh, that's interesting." Gottman calls this a bid for attention. The husband makes a bid, here's something I care about. The wife responds, oh, that's interesting, comes back. Couples that were still together 6 years later had a turn toward rate, which means that the other partner answered the bid with some positive attention 87% of the time. The couples that were not still together 6 years later, the other person answered the bid only 33% of the time. A huge difference. The research has been well covered in a variety of publications, and here's an excerpt from a story in the Atlantic magazine last summer that sums it up very nicely, that gets at what Gottman and his fellow researchers have concluded about what all this means. Contempt, Gottman and fellow researchers have found, is the number one reason that tears couples apart. People who are focused on criticizing their partners miss a whopping 50% of positive things their partners are doing, and they see negativity when it's not there. People who give their partners the cold shoulder, deliberately ignoring the partner or responding minimally, damage the relationship by making their partner feel worthless and invisible, as if they're not there, not valued. And people who treat their partners with contempt and criticize them not only kill the love in the relationship, they also kill the partner's ability to fight off viruses and cancers. Being mean is the death knell of relationships. Kindness, on the other hand, glues couples together. Research independent from theirs has shown that kindness, along with emotional stability, is the most important predictor of satisfaction and stability in a marriage. Kindness makes each partner feel cared for, understood, and validated, feel loved. My bounty is as boundless as the sea, says Shakespeare's Juliet. My love as deep, the more I give to thee, the more I have, for both are infinite. That's how kindness works too. There's a great deal of evidence showing the more someone receives or witnesses kindness, the more they will be kind themselves, which leads to upward spirals of love and generosity in a relationship. There are two ways to think about kindness, the article continues. You can think about it as a fixed trait, either you have it or you don't, or you can think of kindness as a muscle. In some people, that muscle is naturally stronger than in others, but it can grow stronger in everyone with exercise. People in healthy and strong relationships tend to think about kindness as a muscle. They know that they have to exercise it to keep it in shape. They know, in other words, that a good relationship requires sustained, hard work. I encourage you to read the whole article, or if you want to know more about this, the book, The Science of Happily Ever After, which gets into this and other details. And the article is in your order of service, and the article refers to the book, so you can find it. I think I might make it required reading for all the couples that I perform ceremonies for. I think it's really important to understand. I especially note the truth about the upward spiral and the downward spiral. Imagine, if you will, with me, one couple. They do love each other, and they have a lot in common, but there's a problem. He's a little critical. Not awful, certainly not abusive or anything like that, but he can be a bit mean sometimes. She does something that he doesn't like, he makes a nasty face. Maybe a little cutting remark. Not horrible, but not kind, not generous. She, on the other hand, really doesn't like conflict. She hates to fight, so eventually she shares less and less and less, doesn't engage him in conversation because she doesn't want to be criticized. And so he says something, a bid for attention, but she doesn't reply because she doesn't want to get it wrong, and he's convinced that she doesn't really care for him, and so he becomes, you guessed it, more critical, which convinces her that he doesn't really care for her. And the downward spiral continues and continues. I want to say that in this example, don't assume that the gender roles create that dynamic. I've seen it the other way, and in couples with two women or two men as well. It's not about men are from wherever and women are from wherever. We're all from here. It's about kindness and listening and assuming the best of one another, working that muscle of kindness. The good news is that the upward spiral works too. In another relationship, she praises his cooking and thanks him for it. He listens to her talk about the book she's reading, regardless of his level of interest in the subject. She knows he loves country music and can't stand news while driving, so that's what she turns on the radio during the road trip. He tells her each day how much she matters to him. And when crisis or trouble or challenges come, they're there for each other because they trust each other with their heart. They've built it up over time and they are happy. I've seen that too. I've seen it. I wish for it. Don't you? Here's more good news. I know people whose marriage was not so great, ignoring each other, contempt, distance, and who made the decision to change it. And they worked that kindness muscle. And it can hurt when you use it after a long break for the first time. But they worked it, and they changed the direction of the spiral. And they made it work. They were nice to each other. And they're happy together. They're really happy because they know how easily it could have gone the other way. I've seen it, and I know that it's true. So do you. Here's more good news. I know people who did not get their first or even second marriage, significant relationship, to be the healthy, kind, generous relationship that they wanted. They tried, it didn't work, couldn't make it happen. But then they met someone who was kind to them, and they learned to be kind back, and they spiraled up together. Sometimes they'll say, I had no idea it could be like this, supporting each other, and they are happy. I've seen it. And I know that it's true, and so do you. Not perfect, happy. Let me be clear about that, because there is no perfect. And this is one of the important parts about kindness and love. It takes us as we are, not perfect, real. Our expectations are a little bit more modest, or at least they should be. When we want some perfection, some fake romance novel, movie script version of love, whatever movie that might be, we're almost always disappointed. But when we look into each other's eyes and hearts with kindness, we see the real, whole, worthy, imperfect, beautiful person before us. From you I receive, to you I give. Together we share. By this we live. That's kindness, bid and response, mutual regard. For theists, and only some of us are theists, but for us theists, I think it is important to say that this is how the holy, how God loves us too, with kindness and mercy, and not with contempt, but with appreciation for who we really are, with a spirit of forgiving and inclusive love. At least that is the vision of God that we universalists hold to, that immortal love is forever flowing free, a never-ending sea. Devotion to each other isn't magic, and it isn't easy either. It isn't complicated, but it is work, muscle memory. It is kindness. Everyday acts of compassion and praise and caring. This is the love that sustains a marriage, a friendship, a relationship between siblings, between parent and child, a neighborhood, indeed a community, a nation, the world. It's how we turn toward justice and peace by being decent and compassionate human beings. That is the core of it. In 1864, a poet and a priest named Richard Trench was appointed to be the Bishop of Dublin, Ireland, by the Anglican Church in England. The people of Dublin were not happy. They wanted an Irishman, not an Englishman. And eventually it caused the Anglican Church there to separate from the government so they could appoint their own priests. But we now regard that as a good thing, the separation of church and state. But at the time, Bishop Trench wasn't treated very well in the beginning of his ministry there. But he was a sweet and he was a caring man. And he loved the people that he served. And he loved the people in the community of Dublin. And when he retired 20 years later, he was celebrated by the other clergy and by the lay leaders across the city as a man of wisdom and diligence and faithfulness didn't care that he wasn't Irish anymore. Love is patient. Love is kind. You know the words. It's true. Devotion is kindness. Kindness is devotion. It sustains, it repairs, it heals, it gives life, it honors. It's real. It comes in many forms for many different people. It flows freely unless we put up walls to stop it. So let love come to you in its own way, in your own way, and let you be known near and far as a person of kind devotion. Richard Trench, the once resented but eventually loved Bishop of Dublin, wrote the words for our closing hymn, "Make channels of the streams of love." May we do that. Make channels. And let love freely move in us and in the world. We'll rise in body or spirit and sing together. Please be seated. It's been wonderful to be together for worship this morning. Thanks for being here. We live our faith not just for an hour on Sunday, but all through our lives. So I invite you to explore this month's theme of what does it mean to be a people of devotion by being kind to someone who may or may not deserve it. See what happens. If you want to go deeper into the theme, I encourage you to think about joining a spirit journey group, and there's information about those at the welcome table. Belle can let you know what's going on and get you signed up for a group. In your bulletin, there's a variety of announcements and events of what's coming up soon in the church. In particular, I want to highlight the upcoming Path to Membership class on the 7th of March. That's a Saturday. If you're new with us and interested in finding out more about the church, what we do, and how we do it, I hope you'll come and find out that day. There's a sign up on the sign up table. In a moment, we'll collect our offering for the work of justice and mercy in the world. 80% of what's collected today will go to the Family Counseling Service, which offers counseling services on a sliding scale based on need and income to folks who often otherwise would not have access to those important services to help with their mental health and family life. Thank you for your generosity. If you're new with us, a special welcome, and hope you checked in at the guest table on your way in. If not, please do so on your way out so we can be in touch. I hope to see all of you next week when I'll be preaching about devotion to simplicity and sufficiency. What does it mean to do more with less? And especially if you or someone you know could hear a message like that and might find that useful, bring along a friend or two, and we'd love to see you here in church. The offering will now be given and received. I've extinguished the chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. I invite you, if you wish, to rise in body or spirit, to move close to one another, hold hands if you want to, or put your hand on their shoulder for our benediction and then our sung blessing. The words of our benediction from the Reverend Fred Gillis. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. We'll sing together our sung benediction. Go your way in peace. We'll sing it through twice.
Our cat. Yeah.